Dr. Richard Boylan, Ph.D. type, is a behavioral scientist, anthropologist, university associate professor emeritus, certified clinical hypnotherapist, a consultant, and researcher. Ooh. His career has also spanned 4 decades as a service as a psychologist, social worker, a retired clergyman, educator, and space anthropologist. Dr. Boylan is a consultant to star kids and star seeds, seeking to understand their origin, identity, and mission, author of 3 books, Close, Extraterrestrial Encounters, Labor Journey to the Stars, and Project Epiphany. He is also the president of the Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists, a not-for-profit educational and research organization. Richard, when do you sleep, for crying out loud? You're everywhere.
Well, tonight it won't be till 2 in the morning. George, how are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. Good to, you know, I met you at a conference about a year or so ago, right toward the end, and it was a pleasure doing that as well. Tell me, what have you been doing since we last talked a few years ago?
Well, I've been continuing to work with the Star Kids and Star Seed Adults. For any listeners to whom those terms are not self-evident, let me say real quickly that these are people who've been transformed by connection with the star visitors. The two main ways people get transformed is either their parents are visited and some reproductive material is genetically upgraded, and when they are born, they are more advanced, brighter, have a double handfuls of psychic abilities, generally are more robust, and have a pretty strong cosmic awareness. And these kids and adults are now in very great numbers in society and are beginning to make an impact as we transform our society from the kind of scary one world, new world order orientation that you've been talking about to take it in a new and healthier direction. And they're going to put a lot of muscle and brain power and even psychic abilities to that task. So we've been doing workshops and talks and meeting with kids and grown-ups and trying to raise consciousness. I've got a new book out since that listing got printed. Star Kids is the name of it, and it talks all about them. And, of course, writing that has consumed much of the last year.
Now, when you talk about there are many of these children on the planet, how many are we talking about, if you could estimate for us?
Well, yes, I've done some research sampling technique, and the results are, to put it mildly, astounding. Let me give you some global figures,
right,
because this is a worldwide phenomenon, and the numbers are just going to dazzle people. It's my estimate now that, you know, the UN tells us there's 6.3 billion humans alive today, and in my estimate, 59% of them are star kids or starseed adults. Now, that doesn't mean they're all awake yet. These many people know they're different. They feel different. They can't quite put their finger on it. They know they have unusual abilities that nobody talks about in the newspapers or on television. But in many cases, they are aware of contact, telepathic or in person with star visitors. But they're in the closet, or maybe they haven't even had contact, and they're just walking around knowing they're a little bit different but not clear why. But when all these people wake up as this phenomenon comes out in the open and starts to get on the broad general media, these people are going to really snap to and realize why they're different, why they're here, and really get mobilized to make a difference in our society.
How do they look, Richard, though? Do they look like human beings, or do they look a little different?
No, these kids and adults pretty much look like general humans. You wouldn't, in most cases, be able to pick them out of the population as looking much differently. They, in some cases tend to have a little larger head development, particularly in the front or the top, and these are areas of intelligence and psychic dominance in the brain structure. Some of them have kind of a little bit different eye structure in terms of the iris. But mostly they do not look different on the outside. A couple of the physical telltale signs are very often they have lower body temperature than the average regular human of yore. You know, the old fever thermometer says it should read 98.6 if you're
right.
Normal. These kids and starseed adults tend to read a degree or two lower.
Huh.
I've had a physiologist tell me, actually, that's kind of good. It means you're not burning up as fast and you'll last longer. And indeed, many of these kids grow up fast as infants and small children, faster than their peers. But as they get to the other end of their lifespan, they tend to look younger than the folks around them their age that are aging, and tend to last longer. So it seems like a good deal all in all.
Now, if your estimate is correct, Richard, 59% of the children and adults on this planet may be these star children, star adults. That means to me that this campaign has been going on for a long, long time. Has it?
And let me say, yes, and we'll talk a second about the length of that, but let me mention the other dimension of how star kids and star seeds happen besides the gene splicing upgrading.
Yeah.
The other major, in fact, in my research with, I probably work with 500 people now, I've had contact, and many star seeds, star kids. If anything, the more predominant way this happens is that an individual who was a star visitor, an extraterrestrial, if you will, in a previous lifetime comes in as a human this time, but brings along with them just enough kind of elevated consciousness and awareness and energy and extra abilities that they function at a higher level than a regular human would have. So the combination of these star visitor incarnates, if you will, that are now walking around as humans and humans who've been genetically upgraded does constitute the 59%. But because they often come in with no particular awareness from before, they have to be, in most cases, reached out to and explained why they're different, and then everything clicks together and starts to make some sense, and they understand themselves.
How did this...
This has been going on for... well, we can talk about isolated instances going back into the last century, but the real tidal wave of star kids started happening in the... 80s and 90s. By that I mean the percentages really got to be really astounding. We can talk in terms of, well, let me give you a little age breakout here.
All right.
I think it kind of makes the case for what's going on. If you take middle, young, mature adults, 30 to 45, about 45% of them are starseed adults.
Okay.
So that's back 30 years that there was a sizable percentage.
Uh-huh.
You get down to the young adults, the 19 to 29 crowd, two-thirds of those are starseeds. You get down to the teenagers, 8 out of 10 are star kids. You get down to the kids who are infants to 12 years of age, 96% are star kids. So what we've got is a front-end loaded wave that the closer you get to the present, the higher percentage of people coming in and being born are star seeds or star kids. So while there were some back in the 50s and even before then, isolated individuals going back, Einstein was one, and Tesla, you know, going back even into the wraparound of the late 1800s. But the real wave is in the last few decades, and it has now created a majority of humanity in this column, if you will.
Is one select group of extraterrestrials responsible for this, or a number of them?
Well, it is a project of the Star Nations, which is the unified organization of all the intelligent civilizations in contact with Earth. They talk about a primary mission objective to Earth, which is to save Earth, which is headed to hell in a handbasket, as any environmental scientist will tell you, but also the species upon it, the plants, the animals, fish, birds, but very centrally the humans. You know, as fellow conscious intelligence beings, they hate to see a intelligent species blow itself up or destroy its ability to survive on a planet. So their focus is on trying to turn around this madcap race to hell in a handbasket that our current society and culture is on, between environmental degradation, violence, wars, weapons of mass destruction, and New World Order kind of repression and manipulating conflicts everywhere to maintain dominance. They want us to reach our highest and best potential, what the indigenous people of many cultures have called Fifth World, a place where humans live in peace and harmony with the Earth and with each other, and operate in a more family-like way instead of at each other's throats in a competitive, materialistic dominance paradigm that we find ourselves in currently. So they are here with both the incarnation incoming wave of volunteers volunteering to come as a human this time around, live a lifetime, and in terms of the genetic upgrading work. The heavy lifters in terms of the workforce are primarily the Zeta folks, but it's not a Zeta project, it's a whole Star Nation project. They're just the ones that are doing the intensive labor of most of the contacting and the gene splicing.
Richard, this Project SERPO, have you heard of it?
SERPO?
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
This is supposed to have been some kind of a basically trade program between astronauts and extraterrestrials that started in 1965 and lasted about 13 years. But they mentioned Zeta Reticuli. It's very similar, I think, to some of the things you've talked about. I'm wondering if there's definitively been that kind of relationship. But my question to you is this: how do you know this has been going on, this either genetic altering or this transformation?
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a database of 500 cases, and many of the other therapists I associate with who are in our association, the Society of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists, have reached the same conclusion through interviews with people, and in some cases by hypnotic regression, taking people back to encounter incidents, or even back to the beginning of their life and back to the in-between space between this life and a previous life. People have reported out being aware of previous existence on another planet as looking quite different than they do as a human now, and in many cases consciously recalling that they have been presented with the perilous Earth situation and consciously volunteered to come in and live a human life and try and help and make a contribution here.
What's the percent of the genetically altered humans to those that either come through via reincarnation or these other dimensions you were talking about? Is there a breakdown on that?
I don't have a firm figure. I can give you a kind of feel from dealing with many, many people and kind of making a rough estimate. I would say the majority of star seeds and star kids are through the incarnation route, being star visitors before and coming in as a human this time. A minority, but still a pretty hefty minority, are those that have their parents' reproductive material is genetically upgraded, and they come in genetically upgraded as a more fully developed human with these mental and psychic abilities and so forth.
How are they doing it, Richard, without the rest of the population, those people who haven't been affected, of them knowing about it? I mean, do they do it with craft and they beam people aboard? What's the procedure?
Well, ever so many of the encounters people have had have a dimension of the person being taken aboard a craft and their reproductive material worked with, this genetic gene splicing, I guess we would consider it, and then brought back, and when they go on to have a kid, they have a much more advanced kid. This is happening all over the world. The star visitors and the Zetas certainly have mastered the ability of low profile, coming in with cloak craft, picking usually quiet times of the night, 2 or 3 in the morning. Person isn't gone very long, and in many cases there's a hypnotic suggestion they won't remember the encounter until later and better time when they're ready to deal with the information. And this star visitors, the state has been very busy over many, many years, and so there is a very generous sprinkling of these star seeds and star kids all over the planet. Of course, you get to a certain point, as you know, in genetics, where once this upgraded genome is installed in a person, if you will, they then are in a position to pass that on to their kids. The Zetas don't have to come back every generation and do splicing. The new upgraded version of humankind is passed on. It's George Robinson, professor, who gave the keynote talk at the When Cosmic Cultures Meet conference in Washington, D.C. in 1995 that I was at, really brought the room to a hush when he defined the new human that is emerging now. He coined a term which I really like. He called, instead of Homo sapiens sapiens, he said Homo alteria spatialis, meaning man that is different and space-oriented.
Stay with us, Richard. This is an incredible story. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. We've just passed on those of you who are calling right now to talk with Richard Boylan. We're going to take calls in the last hour, but not right now. So not yet, not yet. Dr. Boylan, a couple of weeks ago, you kicked up quite a stir on the Internet with a report about some super secret 1960-ish type meetings. And I want you to explain that, because it is a mind-boggling story.
It is indeed. I just about flipped when I got this information given to me, and it puts a lot of pieces of the puzzle together. And it also, I got it down to the level of detail, as including who are at this meeting, some of the key people. And when you talk about New World Order, we begin to have some of the people ID'd and begin to see how far back it goes. Basically, there were two meetings that I'm going to talk about, one in 1961 and one in 1964. Both of these were meetings between representatives from four governments of Earth and representatives from the Star Nations, the High Council of the Star Nations, the governing body. Let's start with the 1961 preliminary meeting.
Okay.
After about 4 years of private contacts by Star Nation representatives with individual leaders of governments, the four governments being the United States, the Soviet Union, People's Republic of China, and the Council of Europe. So from 57 to 61, Star Nation's representatives made individual contacts with the leaders of these governments. And the point was to get together to create a joint meeting to get some policy agreements hammered out that would achieve a couple things that the Star Nations definitely wanted, which is to stop the attacks of these governments on Star Nation craft that were passing through the sky, and also to permit the Star Nations to continue their mission here, protective and transformative mission, without being attacked. President Dwight Eisenhower agreed to a preliminary meeting, and by 1960, the leaders of all four countries agreed that they would have representatives ready to go in December 12, 1961. The meeting place was London, the Duchess Palace, the Grand Ballroom. December 12, 61, 26 representatives from the four Earth governments, of these particular governments, and three counselors from the Star Nations High Council, along with a four-person Zeta security contingent and a recording secretary, if you will.
Now, let me ask you, what did they look like, these extraterrestrials, Richard? Because,
right.
I mean, could they just waltz into a hotel unnoticed?
Well, I don't think we're talking about waltzing in. This meeting was under extreme wraps, of course, and everybody who went there, I'm sure, was under high security and... you know, the kind of thing where you pull in in a limo with darkened windows, and people don't know who's coming in and and assembling. I would imagine, given the security of this situation and the kind of security they had for the subsequent meeting, that the place is probably cleaned out for this meeting. The Star Nation counselor representatives were a tall Zeta, a praying mantis-type person, humanoid. In fact, a council representative for the praying mantis people, as we would call them. They kind of resemble a humanoid version of that insect, kind of tall, spindly figures, large eyes, and a reptoid humanoid counselor representing the reptilian human contingent. These were not all the races, but you know, just a representative handful of counselors who came to represent the Star Nations for the purpose of this particular meeting on Earth. And they met with these 26 representatives. If you wish, I can mention who some of the human figures that people would recognize were there.
And you're going to have to tell us how you came across this information, because that to me is as equally important as the event itself. But go ahead.
Yes. Well, let me mention who some of the humans were, and then I'll indicate how I got hold of this information. The human representatives were as follows. President Dave Rockefeller headed the U.S. delegation. Apparently he had leaned on President Eisenhower and gotten agreement that he would head the U.S. delegation. Newly elected President Kennedy was only in office a few months and was not fully briefed about the meeting, and while he didn't particularly care for the choice of people representing the U.S. He was so newly in and so left in the dark that he couldn't do much about it.
Right.
Representing the Council of Europe was international law professor Anthony Bradley, who's also was a member of the Council of Europe. Representing the Soviet Union was Premier Nikita Khrushchev in person. And representing the Chinese government of Premier Mao Zedong was his most trusted confidant, his official representative, who they went to great difficulty not to divulge his name. Additional people present were Lawrence Rockefeller, David's brother, and Henry Kissinger, David's chief advisor. The British Queen Elizabeth II was there. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands was there. E.H. van der Bugel, the Secretary General of the Bilderberg Council, the world policy planning group.
Oh, sure, yeah.
If you like New World Order, just listen in on one of their meetings.
Yeah, really.
Was there as well. The only white hat I could detect out of the people that are identified was someone who was an American but was picked by the Russian and Europeans to be a delegate to this meeting, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, the noted African-American scholar and civil rights activist, PhD from Harvard, and so forth. He was of quite a different stripe than the rest of the representatives there, who were pretty much under the thumb of the cabal, the New World Order types, if you will, that made sure that their men were pretty much who were the delegates there. But Du Bois was a different stripe. He wanted to bring education between the cultures, and what really got people hostile at him was that he wanted to go public about the fact that star nations were communicating with humans. He did not feel right that the people of the world didn't know about this meeting. But Rockefeller requested, in his gentle way, Du Bois not to speak about the meeting and told the other representatives they had better not speak about it as well.
Sounds like you obtained the minutes of the meeting, Richard.
Well, not quite.
We'll get to that, though.
The source for this, obviously, is not any of these four governments or anybody on Earth. This thing is beyond super secret classified. Nothing of this has ever come out before, although there are certain circumstantial evidence that dovetail with this very neatly. But the source is the Star Nations. They are the ones that provided this information and indicated it should become public.
Provided it to whom?
Me.
To you?
Me.
In what fashion did you obtain it? I mean, a direct package, or did it come in the mail from Zeta Reticuli? I mean, seriously, how did you get it?
Telepathic communication and assistance from some colleagues who also are in communication with the Star Nations to make sure that it is heard properly and fully.
And when did that happen?
It happened just a few days before I went public with this on March 17th.
Okay, so very, very recently.
Very recently. It took me, you know, several days to kind of put a cold compress to my head with this information. It is so mind-boggling. And I haven't even talked about the final meeting yet. But, just a handful of days before I put it on the Internet, did it come to me.
Okay, so this incredible group of people, they're meeting, and initially then the discussion is, you know, quit shooting at us, we've got a mission here. What kind of agreement did they all come to?
Well, that is the second meeting, which I guess I'll jump to now.
All right.
The first meeting was basically to set up the agenda and everybody hear what the other side wanted and go back and on an individual basis, Star Nation representatives met with individual representatives on the between time. There's a three-year gap between the December 12, 61 preliminary meeting and the second meeting. Now, the second meeting took place on April 14, 1964. The location was in the United States, in fact, in Texas, and to be more precise, in the Guadalupe Mountains that run along northwest Texas into the New Mexican border. To be more precise, pretty much underneath El Capitan Peak, the highest point in the Guadalupe Mountains, and to be more precise, about 15 levels down in a subterranean government installation there that nobody talks about. Guadalupe Mountains National Park is perhaps the national park with the least reason to exist. In fact, even on one of the websites, they complain about there's nothing there when you go there. I think it was, as some government park properties are, designed to protect certain things within them that, whether there's any sagebrush or rabbits protected is purely secondary. In this case, the installation was there. So two people were not at the second meeting. W.B. Du Bois had died right before the second meeting happened under what the Star Nations tell me are suspicious circumstances. In fact, he was killed, I think, the day before the Civil Rights March. That should have made
the Star Nations group a little suspicious of the rest of the group they were dealing with.
Oh, they knew who they were dealing with. They knew these were a bunch of rascals. It was very distasteful to meet with this group, but they had no choice because their rules said they have to deal with who the humans put forward, and these were the four governments that were shooting at them, and the officials designated to speak for these governments, so they had to hold their nose and meet with them. The other person not there was Queen Elizabeth, who apparently didn't have a desire to attend the second meeting. Everyone else was there on both sides, the rest of the human representatives and the Star Nations representatives, and they achieved an agreement that give you the main elements of the of course, from the Star Nation side, they wanted a ceasefire, and the four governments said, yeah, we'll stop shooting at you. And they wanted to get agreement that they could continue to go about contacting people, letting them know they're here. In the case of the ones that have incarnated, come in as humans, to let them know that they're not forgotten, and to kind of wake them up and remind them of their past and why they're here now. And in the case of genetic upgraded star kids and starseed adults, to interact with them and get them oriented to why they're here. The cabal infiltrated government representatives had something they wanted on their side. They cut a pretty hard deal. They insisted that they be given advanced information on science, particularly in the arenas of energy, transportation, and biology. They wanted to get detailed information about the Star Visitors' craft, their UFOs, if you will, and their propulsion system. They wanted information about the energy signature of each of the star visitor races visiting Earth, because these cabal scientists had advanced abilities to detect differing energy patterns of different life forms and wanted to be able to ID these people from a distance. We now know, well, I've been told by the star visitors they now can do it from quite a distance and tell when a star visitor is within our atmosphere and on Earth. They wanted information about, they wanted to restrict the altitudes UFOs could fly at unless they were on a pre-announced mission.
Hmm.
And they wanted to tell, be told by the Star Nations who the Star Nations were visiting, and they wanted to identify everyone who was an incarnate, been a star visitor in previous existence and a human this time around, and all the ones who've been genetically upgraded. They want all every one of those people ID'd. I can go into the reasons why they wanted that information and what use they made of it, but I imagine your imagination is already starting to run with this data.
Absolutely. Now, did the Star Nations approve that? Did they give them what the Earthlings wanted?
Yes, that was the price of the deal. And here is the thinking, the reasoning, the importance, because Earth was headed the way it has been going for destruction, self-destruction, both environmentally and socially, in terms of humankind's survivability. This became such an overarching, important priority that the Star Nations kind of held their nose and accepted very distasteful and unpleasant conditions as the price of being able to
help us
reach Earth and not get shot on the way down and not get interfered with when they wanted to make contact with people.
Richard, stay with us. We're already done with the first hour. We'll be back with you in just a moment. What an incredibly strange story. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.